This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky for March 2014. Well, what about what we can see in the heavens? Over to the west in the evening, we have the wonderful region of sky, Orion setting low down, Taurus with its lovely open clusters, the Hyades and Pleiades up to its right. Down to the left will be the star Sirius in Canis Major. Up and to the left of Orion is the constellation of Gemini, with its bright stars Castor and Pollux. Over to the left of Gemini is a fairly sparse region of the sky. It contains the constellation of Cancer the Crab. But with binoculars, if you sweep around the area, you should pick up what is called M44, the Beehive Cluster. That's a very nice thing to have a look at. Moving further over towards the south and the southeast, Leo will be rising with its bright star Regulus. There's some very nice galaxies, in fact, just below the tummy, if you might think about it, of Leo. Several groups there to see with large binoculars or preferably a telescope. Down to the left of Leo, we have the constellation of Virgo. But not far to the left of the tail of the lion, we have a region, partly in Virgo, partly in Coma Berenices, which is called the realm of the galaxies. And in that direction, we're looking towards the Virgo cluster of galaxies, the largest cluster in our immediate neighbourhood, and in fact, it's the heart of the Virgo supercluster. And our own group of galaxies, called the local group, perhaps 50 of them in all, lies at the outer edge of this supercluster. Rising over in the east, the nice bright star Arcturus in Bootes. And finally, looking upwards and a little bit towards the north, we'll see the Plough making part of Ursa Major. Again, a very, very nice constellation, many interesting objects within it. The two stars on the right-hand side of the Plough, Merak and above it Dubhe, point in fact to Polaris, very close to the North Celestial Pole. Well, Jupiter is having a lovely apparition. It's still well placed in the evening sky, little past its best now, and should be viewed soon after nightfall, when it's closest to the meridian, and so highest in the sky, at over 60 degrees elevation. It never really gets any higher than that. Shining at magnitude minus 2.4, you'll see it for much of the evening and the early morning. Jupiter is lying in the constellation of Gemini. Initially, it's moving westwards in retrograde motion towards the star Mepsuta, or Epsilon Geminorum. But on March the 6th, it resumes its eastward motion across the sky. So as a result, it's actually not moving very much in the sky, so it spends almost the whole month around 2 degrees below and to the left of Mepsuta. With a small telescope, you can see the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it, and at times be able to pick out the great red spot visible as an indentation to the south equatorial belt. Well, Saturn is now rising around midnight at the start of the month and about 10:30 p.m. at its end. It's lying in the constellation of Libra and shining with a magnitude of plus 0.4, which in fact increases to plus 0.3. Again, the disk has a diameter of 17.4 arcseconds, which gradually increases to 18.4. It reaches a stationary point on March the 3rd, when it begins its retrograde motion across the sky, which is in fact because the Earth is sort of moving around the Sun on the inside track. The really good news, of course, now is that the rings are opening out about 23 degrees to the line of sight at present, so we have a magnificent view. With a small telescope, you should be able to spot Cassini's division that lies between the A and B rings. And with a larger telescope, perhaps the Encke gap towards the edge of A ring. Sadly, for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, Saturn is now lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic, so even at opposition, in a few months' time, its elevation will not get that high. Even worse, this will not improve for many years to come. Some reason, in fact, to emigrate to the southern hemisphere. Mars is lying in Virgo It rises about 10 p.m. at the start of the month, about 2 hours earlier at month's end. Its brightness increases dramatically during the month, from plus 0.5 to minus 1.3 magnitudes. Again, the angular size also increases from 11.6 to 14.6 arc seconds as it moves towards opposition on April the 8th. So, of course, given good seeing, it's now possible to see markings on its salmon pink surface, which is about 91% illuminated at present, such as the polar caps and Syrtis Major. The North Polar region is tilted towards us by about 19 degrees, so the North Polar Cap should be particularly prominent. Mars is lying in Virgo, and at the start of the month is just 6 degrees to the left of Spica, Alpha Virginis. It ends the month 5 degrees up and a little to the left of Spica in its retrograde motion across the sky. Mercury reaches its greatest elongation west, that is, furthest in angular separation over to the right of the Sun on March the 14th. So, of course, it'll be seen before dawn. But sadly, from our northern locations, the ecliptic at this time of year is at such a shallow angle to the horizon, it will still have a very low elevation about half an hour before sunrise. Its disk, about 7.5 arc seconds across, which will be 50% illuminated around the 14th of March. It brightens a bit from magnitude plus 0.8 to minus 0.1 during the month. But one has to say it's not really the best month to observe Mercury. Well, I've been spotting Venus in the eastern sky for a few days now. It actually reaches its greatest elongation west from the Sun on March the 22nd. Again, due to the shallow angle of the ecliptic horizon, it does not get that far above the horizon, about 25 degrees elevation on that day of greatest elongation. It's dimming slightly during the month from magnitude minus 4.8 to minus 4.4, whilst its angular diameter shrinks from 32 to 22 arc seconds. But at the same time, the illumination phase increases from 36 to 54%, which is why the brightness doesn't reduce as much as you might expect. Well, what about highlights of the month? Well, we've mentioned Jupiter. It's now well past opposition, but it's still a good month to observe it. Although its angular size falls from 42 to 38 arc seconds during the month, a small telescope can still see lots of details. The features seen in the Jovian atmosphere have been changing quite significantly over the last few years. For a while, in fact, the South Equatorial Belt vanished completely. It's now returned to its normal wide state. On the night sky page, I've included a diagram based on a picture I took way back in December 2012 showing the main features. And also there's a second highlight that tells you when, in the evening, the great red spot will be facing us, and so will be easiest to see. During March, the constellations Cassiopeia and Perseus will be high in the west. If one follows the line of the Milky Way from Cassiopeia over to the left towards Perseus with a pair of binoculars, you should see a little misty patch, which is due to two beautiful open clusters that form what is called the Perseus Double Cluster. And I promise you, this is a lovely sight in a small telescope and absolutely fantastic in a bigger one. Now, down to the left of the brightest star in Perseus, which is called Murfact, is the star Algol, which has been called the Demon Star, as sometimes it appears to wink. In fact, Algol is what is called an occulting binary, where two stars alternately occult each other so that the brightness drops, and in one case the drop is much greater. Minima of Algol may be seen a couple of days during the month of March, and I've given the times and dates on the night sky page. Around the beginning of March, say from the 1st to the 6th, you have a chance to spot Pallas, which is one of the largest of the asteroids, about 550 kilometres across. It's moving northwards through Hydra, but actually briefly, for a few days, sneaks into sextans and comes back into Hydra. It's pretty close at the beginning of March to the second magnitude star, Alphard, in Hydra. It will then be some 4 degrees over to the left of Alphard during about the 1st to the 6th, shining with a magnitude of 7, so it should be easily visible in binoculars. And a nice thing, if we get a few clear nights consecutively, would be to spot its movement over those few days. Pallas is the second largest minor planet after Ceres in the main asteroid belt. And finally, just three linkings, really, of planets and the Moon. On March the 18th, around 11 p.m, Mars in Virgo will be seen just less than 4 degrees to the left of the Moon, which will be 2 days after full moon. The Moon itself will be only about 1 degree to the left of the star Spica, Alpha Virginis. That will make a very nice tight grouping to observe with binoculars, and possibly quite a nice photo opportunity. A couple of days later, on March the 20th, around midnight, looking southeast, Saturn will be less than about 2 degrees to the left of the waning moon. And finally, on March the 27th, 1 hour before dawn, you have a chance to see Venus below a waning crescent moon. It will lie less than 3 degrees below a nice thin crescent. So they'll both be visible in the same field of view of binoculars, and again, another good photo opportunity. So I do hope the sky's clear for a bit after all the clouds we've had during the first couple of months of 2014, and you have a chance to observe the heavens.